Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. Today's guest on the show is Richard Lawrence, who spent over four decades sharing the profound teachings received from advanced cosmic intelligences. If you're ready to discover how mediumship, UFOs, and interplanetary spirituality converge to uplift humanity, this is an episode you don't want to miss. Dare to Dream podcast won three Talk Radio Positive Change Awards, the COVR Award for Best Podcast, Walt Magazine named Dare to Dream one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to this year, and we're high ranking on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on any major podcast platform, and if you like the video instead, find us on YouTube, Spotify, or Rumble. This show is sponsored by Dr. Dane here and Access Consciousness. They do energy work out into the world. You can find out more about their classes or become a facilitator at Dr. Dane here, HEER.com. You can unlock your cosmic potential with a phenomenal free starseed video and report for an engaging exploration that investigates many starseed species in depth. Learn your galactic origins, discover your star lineage and celestial ancestry now. Go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed and get your gift. That's debbiedashinger.com/starseed. I have just been interviewed for a second time on Gaia TV with George Noory. My episode, both of them, are up on Beyond Belief on the Gaia TV platform. If you'd like to check it out, and I ask that you do, please do so. Leave comments. It matters. And if you don't have a subscription to Gaia TV, allow me to offer you a free one-week subscription. Enjoy the trial. It is a great platform. There's so much to watch there. debbiedashinger.com/Gaia is where you pick up your free subscription. debbiedashinger.com/GAIA. I am doing monthly shamanic offerings. All of you know that what I do out in the world is I marry the subjects of shamanism and extraterrestrials because there is some very brilliant and important crossover there, and a lot of healing practices to help Mother Earth right now and to help all of humanity. So if you'd like to join one of the free offerings, and I've got one coming up very shortly, do so. As long as you sign up somewhere on my page, my newsletter, you will get notified right away and you can join. And finally, I have so many events where I'm speaking at. I'm going to talk about one because it's a cruise and the cabins are already selling out. This is a mystery school at sea cruise, and we are going to Greece and we're going to Turkey. I am so excited about this cruise. I'll be speaking on it. Come join. And when you sign up, when you register, all you need is a deposit to go for a double room, a single room, and just put my name down, Debbie Dashinger, as your reference. And you can go to mysteryschoolatsea.com. Of course, it's S-E-A, mysteryschoolatsea.com. I'll see you there. My guest on the show today, Richard Lawrence, is an award-winning international best-selling author and spiritual teacher, frequently appearing in the media as a renowned expert in his field, who has shared his unique and extraordinary expertise in psychic and spiritual techniques, including mediumship, with thousands of truth seekers around the world at countless workshops, lectures, seminars, and retreats for over 40 years. Richard is also the executive secretary of the Aetherius Society for Europe and Africa, the oldest UFO contact organization in Britain and possibly the world, on a mission to spread and act upon the spiritual teaching of advanced extraterrestrials, which were received through the mediumship of his advanced spiritual teacher, master of yoga, Dr. George King between 1955 and 1997. And if you'd like to learn more about Richard, go to richardlawrence.co.uk. And with that, I welcome Richard Lawrence to the Dare to Dream show. It is so great to have you.
Thank you very much, Debbie. I'm very impressed by all those announcements. Sounds fantastic.
Always so much going on.
Yeah.
And I think that is because this is our time, I feel. You and I, this conversation, once upon a time, it was not very couth to talk about, but it is becoming more and more mainstream to talk about advanced civilizations, extraterrestrials,
yeah.
UFOs, and even psychic and mediumship. It doesn't
Yeah,
have
I've
to
seen
be
a massive change. Yeah,
yes.
agreed. I mean, I remember talking, say, in the 80s, 1980s and 90s, you talk about governments covering up the truth about UFOs, which they did and which is now known. And you'd be laughed at for just saying that. Governments don't lie. Governments don't cover up. Now, if I went out now and I said governments are telling you the truth, you can believe them. They'd think I was mad now to say that. So things have changed a lot. But there's no question. People are more open and people are having experiences. And that's the thing, I think, don't you, that really makes people realize this isn't just theory. It's not a matter of faith, even. This is a real thing that I can experience.
Yeah, indeed. 1,000%. More and more people, more and more stories. And so, how about you? You've had a fascinating life. What was your personal journey going into spirituality and mediumship?
Well, first of all, I woke up one morning. I will never forget it. I just woke up. I was age 14. I had a great life, by the way. You know, I didn't have problem childhood, nothing at all. My parents were great. We had enough money. I had a great education. I had lots of friends and lots to do. But I woke up one morning and I thought, what's the point of life? What's the purpose of life? And I actually thought some people might be able to tell me. And I was at a school in England where it was very close to the traditional church of England. It's in Canterbury, and it's close to the cathedral there, and the archbishop, the head of the church, is there. And so I had access to the highest people in the church. I was even considering being a priest. I was, you know, in that sort of atmosphere. And I found they couldn't answer what I would regard as very basic questions. For example, I said this to the dean of the cathedral at the time. I haven't actually met anybody yet that I really think belongs in heaven or hell, because these are the two options, you know. And heaven was a nice place where you go and you have grapes and you have angels, and if you're lucky, you get a good harp, you know. And basically, you lie around on some sort of kind of sofa or something. And that's what it seemed to be. And I said, look, I don't know anyone who'd even be happy there. You know, they'd want to watch football, or they'd want to, you know, find out what's in the soap opera, what's in it. You know, that isn't, that can't be. And then on the other hand, I haven't yet met anybody who really belongs in hell either. Those were your two options, heaven and hell, and a place called purgatory, which isn't properly explained at all. I said, I haven't met anyone who needs to be burnt forever at a stake in hell and prodded by a devil. So what happens to everybody else? What happens that, you know, they're not saints. They're not real gross sinners either. Where do they go? And this was the dean of the cathedral. I thought this was a simple question, but he couldn't answer it at all. I mean, I know now, partly because I've spoken myself and received communications from dozens of people who have physically died. And furthermore, like a lot of other people, I've had out-of-body experiences and gone there. So I know a bit more now, but then I didn't. And I asked other questions. I mean, just to give one other example, and these must be questions people ask all the time, like, if Jesus is the one and only Son of God, why were people born over 2,000 years ago at all? Why would they be born and not given the one and only path to God? What's the point of their life? What about people who never hear about this? and so on. And he couldn't answer that either. So I thought, I can't do this. And I started my search. And at the age of 18 at university, I found the path that answered these questions. I looked into, and I'm still very interested in Eastern religions, yoga. You say you tie it in with shamanic practice. I would say I tie my extraterrestrial belief in with yogic practice. And yoga goes far, much further than physical exercise, keep fit, healthy, etc., have tone your body up or whatever. It's a deep philosophy of great wisdom. It needs great updating. That's a controversial thing, maybe, but it does. But that's all. It's a great, true, profound philosophy. So I came across Dr. George King's teachings then, and Dr. George King was the founder of the Aetherius Society. In fact, at the university I went to, there was the Aetherius Society was incorporated into the union of the university, and the students, before I got there, had voted by a majority to accept the authority of Interplanetary Parliament.
Oh, that's remarkable.
I know. And
Yeah.
on the basis of that vote, I mean, I don't think they knew. I mean, it was the hippie period and people were doing a lot of things and saying things, but nevertheless, they voted. And so because of that, the Aetherius Society was part of the union of that university. So I found all my answers there. And very soon actually met Dr. King because I would then go home in the holidays to nearer to London. He would come over to London every summer and I would be around. He'd look around and there I was. I was only 18 and then I got to know him when I was 19. I started having lunch with him. There weren't a lot of people around in the weekday time. Because of money. I mean, people had to do jobs and things. He was there, as one or two people there, and I was there on my holiday from university. So I got to know him very early on, but I wouldn't have believed then I'd end up being the person who co-authored his last book, which is this book, Contacts with the Gods from Space, all those years later. The last book he published in his lifetime, I should say.
Yes. So I spoke in Glastonbury, England last year. I'm going to speak there again in 2026. And after I spoke, a gentleman who was a fellow speaker, Ananda Sirisena, came up to speak to me afterwards. We had so much in common with extraterrestrials and UFOs. And he is also a member of the Aetherius
He is. He
Society.
runs one of our groups here.
He's incredibly kind. He sent me, I think these things are perfect how they happen because now you're here, right? There's a reason why this is happening. And he would send me links to Aetherius Society, to Dr. George King, some of his videos and so forth. And I was very moved by Dr. George King, this very brave man speaking about what he spoke about at a time. I mean, you're talking about the hippie period, but I mean, we're going way back for him when it
Fifties,
was
1950s,
black and white television. He was being interviewed on talk shows. So tell the audience, anyone who may not know, who was Dr. George King?
Sure, and I will say that a colleague of mine, Brian Kniep, who runs the American headquarters, or he's the secretary of it, and I'm over here in Europe. We co-authored. We knew him well. I was certainly one of his closest friends, which was a great honor, tremendous privilege. I only say that because he said it to me. Otherwise, I wouldn't say that lightly. We co-authored his biography, "The King Who Came to Earth," which is also an audio book as well, by the way. And people can get an insight into this amazing man. It's very advanced. What I would say about him is that he's the real thing. And that might sound a strange thing to say, but there are a lot of claims out there. And I'm certainly not saying, and he would never say he's the only genuine contact. He never said anything like that. But there are a lot of people who aren't, should we say, qualified. I speak as someone who's done a lot of mediumship myself. And they believe it. I'm not saying they're lying or making it up. They believe it. They're having experiences. And some of them, You know, they are a bit of their own imagination, maybe a bit of something that's true. And I think everyone who's looked into this movement has come across this. And it's something to say, really. It does make it more difficult for the new serious investigator, because they have to find out for themselves what's true, what isn't, what's well-intended but not quite true, what is a bit of both. But with Dr. King, he was already a master of yoga, so where the yoga bit comes back, before he ever started to be their medium. And by the way, as you rightly said, he was channeling extraterrestrial intelligences in public in 1955 in London, which was very conservative at the time. I mean, you didn't go, if you were going to post a letter, you put a jacket and tie on just to go down the road. You know, people, younger people can't imagine these things, but that was what happened in England. You know, not that I was around much, but, you know, I'd only just been born. But he was doing that then. And he was a shy person. As I say, I knew him very, very, I got to know him very, very well. We spoke together on the phone every day. If I wasn't with him in America, or if he wasn't in England, we would speak every day pretty much for 20 years, the last 20 years of his life. So I got to know him very, very well indeed. And I traveled with him a lot. And I know he was... Strange thing, because he was completely confident. He knew what he was. He knew who he was. He wasn't guessing. He knew he'd had genuine contacts. They were completely proven and provable. And he'd kept a record of them. I actually believe he didn't even come from this world. He never claimed that, but that's absolutely... I have no doubt about that at all. He was... absolutely, completely the real thing. I could say so much more. You'll have to stop me, because I won't stop if you got me. Get me going on Dr. King.
It's glowing, and I agree with you. I agree with everything you said. So explain to us what made Dr. George King's connection to extraterrestrials so profound. Who was it he was in contact with? What was that contact like? Because even his mother, right, saw them come in and out of homes.
That's true. I think he was fortunate with his mother, if I can put it that way, because I think a lot of mothers, you know, we think of the life of Brian, he's just a naughty boy. But if you know that film, I don't know. But I think a lot of mothers would be quite worried about their sons if they said, look, I'm in touch with aliens and I'm, you know. But in fact, she was herself a mystic. She was psychic. She was... Both she and he, not that she's comparable with him, not at all. I'm not saying she wasn't extraterrestrial or anything like that, but she was a very grounded woman, a very practical woman, but a woman who was very open to psychic and spiritual things, which made that a lot easier for him. And she completely accepted his claims. And then she had her own experiences as well. Not as a channel, but with UFOs, with even going inside UFOs. And this is very unusual. She claimed things that even he didn't, and he fully endorsed this. And this all happened after his contacts. But anyway, to come to your question, it was 1954. He was already a master of yoga. And by that, I mean, just to illustrate this, he'd been practicing advanced forms of yoga. If people are familiar with this, one is Kundalini yoga. There are many others, Raja, Nani, not just the Hatha yoga of the physical exercises. He did do that for 10 years, for 8 hours every day. And you have to sort of get your head around that. I've actually tried to find somebody else in the West who has claimed to do that. And I haven't been able to find anybody who's even claimed to do that. He did that, by the way, as well as doing jobs. Wasn't particularly bothered about his career. He drove taxis. He drove as a chauffeur. He did other jobs in for businesses and different things. Whatever it took, he was just focused on this yoga practice, as intense as you can imagine it. Not in some beautiful ashram in India, or in some perfect situation in lovely California, for that matter, or even in Devon in England or something like this. He was in London and he was doing this yoga, as he used to call it. Well, he gained a very deep state of consciousness, which is called samadhi, for those who are familiar with it. This takes a long time of serious practicing. I've been doing spiritual practices intensively and karma yoga every day for over 40 years myself. I only managed to get a level of a samadhi, which is not the level he got, a lower level, but a level of samadhi 2 years ago. Or is it three? So it's within the last 2 or 3 years. And a lot of people don't attain it at all. But he went at it as a young man, and this meant making many sacrifices, financial, relationship-wise. He was completely celibate. He did marry, as I mentioned later on, but his wife, the lady he married, Monique, was his most devoted disciple at the time and remained his disciple. And he therefore attained this high state. And this is important, I think, when one talks about his credentials, because I've noticed a lot of people who claim to channel extraterrestrials don't provide any credentials or even a proper explanation of what's going on when they do channel. That isn't to criticize them or say it's nothing at all. There might be something there. There might not be something there, or it might not be quite what they think it is, or whatever. But with him, because of this yogic training, he was extremely accurate. This is the important thing. So there's two things that he could do. He could enter a trance, which was a samadhic trance. It was a yogic trance. Now, as I say, I've done mediumship myself for decades. I haven't heard of a medium who uses samadhi as their trance condition. They might use a lighter trance. I've done it myself. And if it's a lighter trance, it's very difficult to be completely accurate. So what I do myself is clairaudience, psychic hearing, and I write it down very, very quickly. It's not automatic writing, though. But with him, he entered this deep trance. So you get two things. You get the accuracy, but you also get the voice because they're speaking through him. And you can hear this voice, and you can hear a voice, for example, of the Master Aetherius, which was his first contact and his main contact, you could say. And you could hear that same voice decades later. Through him, it's exactly the same. I happen to know, because when you know someone and you have many dinners with them, and he was a great humorist. He loved to joke, and sometimes he'd put on an accent while telling a joke of a different kind. And he was good, but he wasn't superb at putting on accents. It didn't. Who cares? I don't care. But nor am I. I'm no good at it at all. But he put on these accents. But I know personally, he wouldn't have been able to duplicate to that perfection the voices of these consistent communicators through him over the decades.
Yeah.
That's not why I believe him, by the way. I'm just
Best
illustrating
you
the accuracy.
know what planet system, what galaxy, universe, Aetherius, Master Aetherius was from.
This is the other thing I think that marks him out from most, if not all, claimants. He always said that he was receiving communications from this solar system, but not intelligences who live on this realm, this physical realm. So he said you could go to Mars and you wouldn't necessarily see the life there at all, or Venus or Jupiter. If you can have life, and you and I know, and I'm sure a lot of your viewers and listeners know, there is life on this earth that we can't see unless you happen to be clairvoyant or psychic, then you can. Or, as I say, if you can astrally project, you can go and have a chat with your late mother or with, if you're lucky enough, an advanced teacher or whatever it might be. But likewise, on the other planets, there are intelligences living on higher frequencies, higher dimensions, some people might say, that you can't physically see or detect necessarily, unless they choose to be detected, and they don't inhabit the physical level. they're inhabiting a higher level. Now, that's what he said back then in 1954. He started in 54. He first went public in 55. He consistently explained it in the way I've just explained it. I think quite a few contactees think to themselves, well, there's no life in this solar system. So I'm thinking of a contact in the Pleiades or the, you know, Sirius or somewhere where there could be life. But he's always, let me read, if I may, just one sentence from one message, especially for your show, Debbie, because I picked this out for this show, thought this was perfect. And this comes from, it's a transmission from Saturn, and it was delivered in 1957 through him and recorded. And the first sentence is this: today's dreams can only become tomorrow's manifestation if the dreamer acts in love. For this energy is all in all, and all in all that.
What does that mean to you?
That means to me that all life is composed of energy. And may I say, the word Aetherius means one who travels through the ethers. One who speaks through the ethers, you might say. So I think going back to the old elements, you've got earth, fire, air, water, as we know with astrology, and then you've got the mystical element of ether, or akasha, as they say in Sanskrit. And throughout all the levels, throughout this whole galaxy, which, by the way, the galaxy is a living intelligence, there are a multitude of frequency manifestations of energy. If that energy is tempered with love, which is an impersonal, and I would say heart-directed, and I mean by that the chakra, the heart chakra-directed, although it's linked to the physical heart, that will condition that energy. And as it says here, that energy is all in all. So all life is energy, and all in all that, which is that which isn't even, and I don't want to get too heavy here, but that which isn't even in manifestation, because the divine source of all things exists in manifestation, but it also exists out of manifestation.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I concur. That's actually also a very shamanistic point of view, where they talk about the way to heal is to stop living in the head. That's a very old paradigm. And it's a long walk maybe for some people to come down to the heart, but the heart is where everything takes place, where harmony is, where healing is, where cooperation is. And here on this planet and with each other, but also becoming part of the interstellar community, which I think we're very much ready for. So I love that message. Thank you. And I want to take this, what you're saying about the galaxies and about the universe and its consciousness, also to Mother Earth, because I watched videos that came out and some of the memes from Dr. George King, who so profoundly got it, who spoke about Mother Earth, this living, powerful goddess entity that we're so fortunate to live upon. And in my estimation, my shamanic estimation, it is so important to build that respect and that relationship with Pachamama, Mother Earth. What are your thoughts on this? And what did Dr. George King think about this?
What an absolutely wonderful question. May I say that? Thank you very much for asking that question. It's a beautiful question. What I would say, first of all, is that the single thing which motivated Dr. King above all other things, I mean, he was very, very dedicated to service to humanity, but there was one thing which motivated him even more than that, and that was devotion to Mother Earth. That was his number one reason for being here at all. Right from the beginning, he was focused on that, and his whole life was an expression of that. The two go perfectly together, because if humanity raises its consciousness, thank you for bringing in consciousness. If humanity raises, this is the way to stop war, by the way, isn't it? This is the way, because a lot of healers I've met, they think they give healing and they can heal people and they're getting results and it's great. And we do healing, I know you do healing, it's a wonderful thing. But they don't think they can heal the world. They don't think they can do it. And I've been on television programs with pretty well-known healers in this country, and they have said, "Well, I don't think we could do that." Yes, you can. Everybody can. Everybody can make a difference in the world. And when we help the world, we are helping the Mother Earth, because she is waiting. We owe everything to her. She's a living being. When people talk about ecology, they often talk about, oh, for my children and my grandchildren. And no, that's fine. But no, ecology should be done first and foremost for Mother Earth. That's why we should do it. That's enough of a reason to do it. That's what causes us to even exist. We wouldn't have the greatest thing we have, the greatest gift we have, is experience. And we wouldn't have that without Mother Earth. So I completely endorse what you say. There's a beautiful, beautiful practice, which is called the Violet Flame Practice. And there are people who do actually a violet flame practice, and there's some do it in the name of Count Saint Germain, for example, and it's a wonderful thing. But some of those people don't actually know where that violet flame truly comes from. It comes from the Mother Earth.
I didn't
She
know that
gives this
either.
flame. She
Wow.
gives this willingly. Every time a spiritual person wishes protection. If there are people watching now who are suffering from interference, who are suffering from bad energies around them, you can protect yourself by using and calling on this violet flame from Mother Earth. And all you have to do is, with reverence, as much reverence as and thankfulness as possible, because that will give it more power, by the way, if you do it with reverence, as I'm sure you know from a shamanic point of view, then request the violet flame and visualize the violet flame, and it will come up through you. You might be sitting, by the way, in the middle of an office somewhere, being shouted at, or where the atmosphere around is absolutely terrible, and everyone's at each other's throats, or there's jealousy, or whatever there is, or even worse, there's negative energy being sent to you from some source. You can bring this violet flame. Nobody needs to even know it. And the vibration, test it, don't take my word for it. The vibration in that office or wherever you are will change all around you for the good, because this protective force is a real living force. You start by visualizing it, but you are visualizing something that really exists. It's not in your imagination, it's real. And you'll make a connection with it, and it will stand you in fantastic stead, and it will be a connection with the wonderful Mother Earth.
Great practice. I love it. Yes. Tell us also about the 12 blessings. What are the 12 blessings? Why are they central to the Aetherius Society's work?
Happen to have them right here.
Ta-da.
The 12 blessings, they were delivered through Dr. King in 1958, actually here in London. The other major teaching that we have is called the Nine Freedoms, and that was delivered down the road from you in Los Angeles, in Hollywood. But these ones were delivered in London. They were delivered by the Master Jesus when he announced, and this is 1958, that he was going to actually be a channel for the Master Jesus. There was quite a bit of outrage. This was, of course, a heretical thing to say, and he even had threats. But he went ahead, he did it. These can be heard, and this is an example of what I was saying earlier, because he didn't just have the accuracy, he had the voice. And people can, through the Aetherius Society website, they can obtain this audio material and hear this voice. And when they do, as a matter of fact, we hold regular online services every Sunday, actually. And they can be tuned into online, more than one a day. I mean, there's one from Los Angeles, one from London. And at pretty well every one of those Sunday services, we play one of these blessings. And people can then hear this voice. And I know people who've heard that voice without being told who it was, who have guessed that it's the Master Jesus. It's so beautiful. Never mind the message and the teaching in it. What it's used for mainly, though, is not so much as a teaching, although it is, as I have found, I've realized much more in the last few years than I ever realized before, actually. But it's mainly used as a practice, and it's used to send energy out to the world, and it's the most beautiful, wonderful practice for sending it out, and it's done by sending it to 12 focal points. So, blessed are they who work for peace. Blessed are the wise ones. And you go through all 12, and one of them, number 7, blessed is the Mother Earth. And then you work your way all the way up to even to higher, goes higher and higher from that point to the sun. People who revere the sun are wise people. Wise people. You know, there were missionaries from more than one religion who went out, found so-called primitive people worshipping the sun, and tried to stop them doing it because they were pagans. They were wiser than the missionaries by a long way, by doing that one single thing. The sun is the source of all energy in our solar system. We're solidified sunlight. So this blessed is this mighty sun, and it goes on all the way up to the final blessing, which is, I think, the best description there is that I know of what God really is. In fact, all the questions I had when I was that 14-year-old boy in Canterbury, trying to, you know, think I'm crying in the cathedral because I couldn't be a priest, all answered in this 12th blessing, blessed is the absolute. I can't hear you now.
So sorry. That's so much more beautiful than saying the all that is. I love that. The absolute.
Yeah. The absolute, yes. I mean, I'll just give you an idea, if you like, of the beauty of this. This is a section here that I can really relate to. It's very poetic, this book, this as well, this text. It is the I am within man. It is the life within all things. It is the rain. It is the drought. It is the gentle breeze of summertime. It is the mighty wind across the seas. It is the seas. It is the emptiness of space. It is the fullness contained within space. It is the worlds. It is ever and forever and forever. It is infinity. And yet it is more than this, for it is behind even these things. And that's just one extract about it. And there's plenty more.
Those have energy in them, by the way. Those have coding, because I can feel the words here. But what I can feel is the energy that I believe is encoded probably in all of his books, because.
Very good point.
Very powerful.
Very, very powerful. And completely explanatory and completely unlimited. Mm. This is the God, he says, which cannot ever be limited by man or God-man. This thing, this all things is now blessed. And I remember Dr. King saying, thing is the perfect word. There's no other word you could use because it's above words. It's not words.
Thank you for reading those. That's really meaningful that you're sharing, giving us another layer and another level like that. And can you talk, Richard, about how do you integrate concepts like Kundalini, like the chakras, into the work you do, into your workshops, into your personal spiritual practice?
And by the way, thank you for opening the door, because you're so good to talk to that I can reveal these things very happily. You know, I've done many, many interviews over the years, hundreds and hundreds of them. And I used to be on regular mainstream radio shows and TV shows over here. And I'm quite used to the put downs, the, you know, everything you say, they had to bring somebody else in to give the opposite point of view and a skeptic. And it's all right. But the trouble, you don't get past first base. But when I talk to you, we can lift off. We don't have to bother with that. And I think it's better for people because if they don't want to listen to what you say, they can switch off anyway. But if they do, we can actually get so. Sorry, to answer your question, Kundalini, chakras. Well, I've realized myself more than I ever had done. I've always believed in them. I've always used them. Anyone can use them, by the way. Just one little tip. If you want I'll just quickly say this. With the 12 blessings or any other kind of healing prayer, good way to do it is simply just take off watches and rings. If you can, not all rings are easy to remove, but if you can, just raise your hands just like this and visualize the energy traveling out through both palms because there are chakras in the palms of the hands. They're not major chakras, but they're very important chakras in the palms of the hands. You can feel them. You don't have to take my word. This you can feel. And though, and this is where a lot of people miss out, through the heart chakra as well. And the heart chakra is in the center. It's not on the left-hand side. It's a few inches in front of the body, where the breastbone meets, a few inches in the sternum, I think it's called, a few inches in front of that. And you bring the energy down from above you, and it will come. I mean, I can feel it now, just talking about it. It's a real force, and it can travel down and out. And, you know, you can send healing to anybody. And it's very liberating because so many people feel helpless and frustrated. And well, I can't do anything about Gaza, or I can't do anything about Ukraine, or whatever it might be, or it might be something more local, or my aunt who's dying, or there's nothing. Yes, you can. I've got to come back to that. You raise the hands, send energy. When you've finished your sending of your energy with love, that's your energy, right from that first message I read out. Must be done with love. That's all. It's, you know, everybody can do that with real feeling, not emotion per se, but pure love, kind of an impersonal love for the betterment of all life. And then when you finish, just do this, just once across, palm across the other, and that's kind of seals the energy. The energy stops, and then try, if you can, just to detach from it. But that's a powerful thing to do. Don't go around thinking, I wonder if my aunt's better now, or I wonder what's, I'm gonna switch the television, what's happening now? Don't you let it go, but you can sometimes get a miracle that way. You might not even know what good you've done. You could do tremendous good. And that's just one illustration of using the chakras. And of course, just to finish that point, when you do this as well, you do yourself tremendous good because, for a start, you won't feel helpless. You've done what you can do. You've done something. Helplessness is the most. I used to have a column in a paper here called The Observer on body and mind, and a lot of research was done. Feeling helpless in any situation is the most stressful condition there is. But if you can do something, then you transmute that feeling of helplessness. So it's good for you. It's good for your karma, but also while you're visualizing energy flowing out through the heart chakra, you're raising the lower energies in the lower chakras. You know, there are seven major chakras. I do a lot of work with this and events around this, upwards towards the heart center. You don't have to even visualize that. You just let the energy flow. But wherever you put your mind, energy will follow. Whenever you think a thought, you invoke energy to some degree, for good or for bad or for neither. It must happen. So you'll start to raise your consciousness and you'll get more of a heart-centered consciousness.
That's beautiful. Yes, I agree with you. And that's a really interesting point of view. I've never heard that before. But the concept of feeling powerless over is a terrible one because there's no place to go. There is nothing to do. You are just a victim and at the effect of. And so to have practices that actually create empowerment can create shifts, improvements, let you be in the driver's seat is really important to have in our toolbox. And
Absolutely.
I'm going to try this exercise. I've got a dog who's been very sick, my goodness, which she's been through the past 2 months. It's been quite a journey for both of us. And I've been doing a lot of healing practices, and I'm going to try this one that you
What's your
just.
dog's name, Debbie?
Her name is Shelby.
Shelby.
She's a little cockapoo. She's like
Okay.
19 pounds, super adorable and loving. And I don't know why she's only 9. She's not old at all, but at her very tender age, she suddenly had heart conditions and adrenal nodules and gallbladder. Like, wow, very interesting.
We'll
So
send her
I'm,
some healing.
thank you. That's very kind. Really, it is. I also want to ask you about you because your gifts, what you are capable of, mediumship, channeling, and so forth, that's fascinating to me. Can you describe a time, Richard, when channeling brought about a significant shift or an insight for you, for community, for somebody you were working with?
I mean, I don't regard it as exceptional myself because to me it's very kind of normal. And then, of course, knowing Dr. King as I did, and being very close to him, it's nowhere near the level he was at. So that keeps me in my place, which is a good thing. But I will say it's real. That's what I've got to say. I can't argue with it. It's a fact. I did set out to do it, though. It didn't just happen. And he helped me. I mean, I started out giving psychic readings when I was in my early 20s or my later 20s, I suppose. And he helped me actually. I used to use a crystal ball originally, and he mainly for sort of Taoist reasons more than how people think of the crystal ball. Like, to me, it was symbolic of the void in which all things exist, you know. And he designed the cover for me and really encouraged me tremendously. And this led from giving readings, and I started out actually with his wife, giving his wife a read, Dr. King's wife, and she encouraged it as well, and a lot of friends. And then I became very active. I thought I was like booked up for a year ahead and so forth. But I wanted to move on from that because I found that most people came for readings to find out about their love life or their business life. Perhaps their health. That's none of which I'm saying is wrong, by the way. But I wanted to go in a more spiritual direction, let's put it that way. And people who wanted to know about their spiritual life, primarily, everything affects everything. Got to have your feet on the ground. And if you're going to be really active in spiritual things, you will need to take care of your money and your health and so on. So I'm not saying you won't, but that's where I wanted to go. And then I started to channel from there, really. And it was incredibly exciting, I will say, when it started off, too much so. I think an excited psychic is not a great thing because, and I was, you need to keep it under control, and you need to remember one big thing, which is that your own intuition is the most important thing. Your own intuition, never lose it. It's never wrong. It is never wrong. You might get it wrong. Yes, you might think your intuition is actually your imagination, so you get it wrong, or vice versa. But you need it. You need to be guided by that inner voice. So I had to learn that while at the same time channeling, which is a very, very different experience from listening to your own intuition. So I tested it with psychic hearing, clairsentience, and I got involved in a sort of program which ended up in a book actually that I wrote called God's Guides and Guardian Angels. But I started off channeling poems. And this wasn't my idea. This was an idea given to me by somebody on a higher realm by the name of Charles Bradlaugh. I'd never heard of him, but he is known. And he told me, he encouraged me to do this. And he's a big networker on the other realms. And so a number of kind of well-known writers were brought in just to give me one thing. So I would, for example, but I was writing down, as I mentioned, not automatic writing. I was fully in control, but I was writing very, very quickly. Now, when you write very quickly, let's say in 3 minutes, you write down a poem, and you can't think about it very much. Because you just got to concentrate on getting the words. You can't, never mind get it to rhyme or anything like that, or scan. You're just getting it down. You don't think about whether you like it, what it means, or if you do, your own mind will come into play. So although it wasn't a somatic trance as used by Dr. King, which completely removes the conscious mind out of the equation, and so that's why he's a I was a 100% pure channel, and I don't know of another one, not even the greats like Madame Blavatsky. I don't know of anyone who actually did use that method. You've got to have really strict concentration to stick to it. So I'd write this down and I'd look, and then it would be a 17th century English. It would rhyme perfectly in iambic tetrameters, which I'd never heard of, by the way. And it would be two people who I hadn't heard of who were known, William Davenant and Fulke Greville, who did exist. In fact, William Davenant was a poet laureate, but I'd never heard of him. And so I'd find, okay. And it was a clever thing to do because it was very provable, you know, if you write a poem. So, long story short, this culminated in three particular writers. One was Francis Bacon, who I believe actually wrote the Shakespeare plays. One was Tolstoy, and one was Dante. Now, I know that's a massive claim to make, but if people look at my website, they'll see there an article written by Psychic News, which was like our number one psychic magazine here for, I don't know, decades and decades. They put it out. They put these out. As an example and it's very, you know, in the style of those people, which I couldn't invent. Now, someone could say, of course, that I just went away and made it up and studied Dante and studied, you know, fine, they can say that. But I know what happened. I didn't know how Dante spoke at all. I just wrote down what I was given. So that was just, if you like, a test case for mediumship. But more usefully, you know, the idea of it, by the way, their idea was to prove that mediumship is a thing. That's what they wanted to do, so that then people could look at someone like Dr. King and say, okay, I now understand mediumship, and I now see that, yes, this is something I should look into. That was what they wanted through giving me these various writings. But for myself, it's been incredibly helpful guidance in numerous ways. And extremely accurate ways, as well as enabling me to help other people with guidance.
What a remarkable, unique story. I didn't expect poetry of all things, and incredible that you went there. Very unique. What are the spiritual teachings, Richard, of the advanced extraterrestrials? What are the core spiritual teachings that you all have learned through the advanced extraterrestrials?
Well, they can be summarized into one word, which is service. They are all about service. And if a person wants to know what they should do with their life, they should give service in the way that they believe is the most potent form of service they could give. And I believe, and in the Aetherius Society, we believe that all forms of service are necessary, but in this day and age, spiritual service is particularly necessary. And if people are believers in that and they're able to do that, that's the path they should take, because there are many people who don't believe in it, and they will do some of the other things which have to be done, which are noble and wonderful. People who go out into war-torn areas and help the victims there and so on, it's fantastic. And that's really to be admired. But spiritual service can be done by absolutely anyone. They can use the 12 blessings, for example. They can do this practice, send energy out. We also use mantras as well, you know, Buddhist and Hindu mantras in Sanskrit. They can do healing. They can do world healing. They can tune in with a craft called Satellite Number 3, which comes into orbit of Earth on certain dates to potentize the efforts of people by a factor of 3,000 times. Now, the problem these spiritual cosmic intelligences have is us, in a nutshell. Its disbelief is a problem. I think it's fine to say, I don't know. But there are so many people who will actually actively disbelieve. And I'm going to say those people are fools. I say that with kindness, as kindly as you can. But they are fools because they don't know. They're saying they disbelieve in something without knowing that it's untrue. But to say, well, I don't know, I need to look into it, absolutely fine, of course, naturally. And people should discriminate. So, because of that, these intelligences who are pouring energy down to our world at certain times in the year, they're dependent on us using it. If we don't use it, it's no good. In fact, if they poured energy down that was not used, it could even be harmful because there'd be a certain what's called, they call resonance factor, and it would kick back in a way and cause various problems. So they are limited by us. And that's why they are asking us to cooperate by sending out as much spiritual energy. The one energy where we started by the first quote, the energy which is all in all and all in all that, tempered by love to humanity. And there are so many ways to do it. There are practical ways to do it, of course. And if you're engaged in an organization like the Aetherius Society, things we have to do, maintain buildings, look after publicity and promotion as far as we can with our budget, to make the information available to people, look after the finances. We run a health food shop. There are very practical things that people can do, and those two, because of the motive behind them, they will be potentized 3,000 times. Healing will be potentized 3,000 times. The effects of it on the whole. Not necessarily on that one patient, by the way, but on the whole. And this will change the karma of the world. Now, that's one thing I find that where I do disagree with some of the old yogic teachings. I say they needed to be updated. They do tend to see karma, a lot of them, in a very fatalistic manner. And they do say, well, this is your dharma and you've got to work through it. And, you're either born to do this or born to do that. And Dr. King was an absolute breath of fresh air. He was a new age yogi. And he came along and he said, you can change your karma. And the thing to do is the thing which will bring maximum benefit to the whole. So, and of course, when you do that, though, just to finish the point, you'll also advance yourself. It must happen. Just like when you pray, you'll start to draw energies up to the higher chakras. This will awaken those higher chakras. You'll have higher states of consciousness. You'll become more sensitive. You'll become more psychic. And eventually, you can enter the deepest states of meditation and even cosmic consciousness.
And you mention a satellite that when it comes, we can harness its energy and its potency times 3,000.
Correct.
When does the satellite come?
I'll give the exact dates if I may.
Yes.
And they're in that book and they're on our website, I'm sure. But these are they: April the 18th to May the 23rd, July the 5th to August the 5th, September the 3rd to October the 9th, November the 4th to December the 10th. That's from memory, but I'm sure that's correct.
Do you think, Richard, that we are on the brink of first open, undeniable contact with benevolent extraterrestrial civilizations?
I think that's a fascinating point. Brink is one of those words, isn't it? I think that it's going to come, we're getting closer. that, again, the problem is us. I think that if we hadn't had so many lies told by governments, and they're still not telling us the whole truth, as you know very well, you campaign so wonderfully on disclosure and so on, and I've done it myself for over 40 years as well, especially over here, and the media treats it so badly, so ridiculously. I mean, I was the one who brought out the TASS papers from the Soviet Union at the time of Gorbachev. I just remember bringing it out and putting it out on television, and it was laughed at. I mean, there was Gorbachev trying to actually release details of some pretty spectacular UFO landings and so on, or his government was, and the Western media treated it appallingly. So because of all this, it's delayed, and it's delaying what you're talking about, because they aren't going to force us to change until they really absolutely have to. What they are waiting for is us to open our minds and our hearts to them. And by us, I don't mean campaigners like you and I. I mean the governments of the world, the people of the world, to free themselves of dogma, even if that dogma is religious dogma, or even if it's scientific dogma, and open themselves up. I mean, some of the sightings, some of the occurrences of recent have been physically impossible for us to do. Some of the demonstrations in so many ways have proved they have a science which is a spiritual technology, you might call it that. Even time travel, even knowing the minds of pilots in the US Navy and so forth. This is well proven, and yet people don't act upon it as much as they should. So unfortunately, it's that that is delaying it. It could happen very quickly, but there will come a time, that's for sure, when they will absolutely prove themselves to us all. But that won't be good for everybody, because some people will resist it. I wouldn't put it past some governments to try and fire missiles at them, which is pathetic because they won't get anywhere, but it will damage us. That's why they're not frightened. They're not bothered by us because we are pinpricks. You know, it's nothing to them. They're worried about what we might do to ourselves. That's what's delaying them.
I understand. Tell us, Richard, where can we find you? How can people work with you? What haven't we covered? And then definitely bring this around to connecting with you further.
Thank you, Debbie. Well, people can find me on my website, which is richardlawrence.co.uk, and I'll be very happy to respond to any inquiries, any questions, any comments, with pleasure. The Aetherius Society is worldwide. We've got a major headquarters in LA, actually, but also we're all over the world. I mean, I won't say we're all over the world. We're in several countries around the world, let's put it that way. We have thousands, I would say tens of thousands of supporters of one kind or another. We're not millions of people, but we make our message as available as we can afford to, as we're able to. And our website is, I'll spell it actually, is Aetherius, aetherius.org. We do podcasts as well. You'll find all about us on those two websites, that one or mine.
Great, aetherius.org. And this is Dare to Dream. So, Richard, what are you next Dare to Dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
Service. Now, I mean, as I mentioned, I've been very fortunate, and I've had these somatic experiences, and I had an experience which I believe was a cosmic consciousness. In fact, I don't believe, I know it was a cosmic conscious experience a couple of years ago. And that's something that's been my goal, you know, all throughout my life, to get to that point. I didn't know whether I would in this life or not. I'm sure I was helped to get there. The only value of that really, though, is it shows people that this path really works, and it really does. I've devoted my life to this. I've been fully active in this since my teens, late teens, and certainly full-time professionally in this since my 20s. And it does work. It's a path that works. But when you come out even of these highest states, even these somatic states, there's only one thing you really want to do is serve. Because when you enter an advanced state like that, there's only one thing you realize. Actually, I remember a yogi going up to Dr. King on a holy mountain called Holsen Down in North Devon. I didn't hear it, but a friend of mine told me what was said. And he went up to Dr. King and he said, "You know, I've been to the Godhead," said this yogi to Dr. King. And Dr. King said to him, "Well, did you take your hat off?" Because he had a great sense of humor. And the yogi said, didn't know what to say. So he then said, "Okay, so you've been to the Godhead, so you know that everything is one. So the only thing to do is to serve. And that would be my message, and that's really my goal. There are many ways to do it, and I'm running events, and people can find out about those. I'm running the society, or helping to over here and around the world, actually. But service is the order of the day.
Service is the order of the day. Thank you so much for coming on the show today and for everything you shared. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much, Debbie. I'm really pleased you invited me. Thank you.
Me as well. And I end today's show with this quote: "When humanity learns to look up, not just to the skies, but to the higher truths offered by those who come in peace, we will remember that we are not alone and never have been. We are cosmic beings on a sacred journey, reconnecting to our family and our galactic home." Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger. Leave a comment and share. I read all your comments. And next week on the podcast, Soma Ara will be here. Soma is from Ireland, and she's a Pleiadian starseed and channel who is here to help assist humanity raise its frequency. Thank you so much for joining us today on the show. There's lots to look at if you want to keep going through all the interviews. And again, leave the comments and subscribe. It helps others who need to hear this conversation to find it. Remember, folks, dare to dream and dare to create your dreams into your reality.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream Podcast with Debbie Dashinger, your number one transformation conversation.